years, the Democratic Party has defined itself as distinct from Republicans mainly on the basis that it is the corporate party that likes minorities, whereas Republicans are climate-denying bigots. Turns out the entrance of Bloomberg into the race has exposed that those rules are somewhat flexible. Just look at his record. His stop and frisk policy was ruled an unconstitutional violation of rights by a New York federal court. He blamed poor, disproportionately black and brown people for the financial crisis. He pushed for Social Security cuts, and he bankrolled Republicans who oppose climate action. Heck, he was a Republican until recently, supporting George W. Bush in an address at the 2004 Republican National Convention. I get it. The number one priority of most Democratic voters is beating Trump. But it doesn't help us much if we replace him with someone who shares so many of his worst qualities. Bloomberg and Trump are actually aligned on the issue of stop and frisk.
They just keep saying, oh, it's a disproportionate percentage of a particular ethnic group. That may be, but it's not a disproportionate percentage of those who witnesses and victims describe as committing the murder. In that case, incidentally, I think we disproportionately stop whites too much and minorities too little.
And it's not just his record on racial issues. Bloomberg has had 64 sexual harassment and discrimination cases filed against him. All of Bloomberg's flaws, Trump will exploit them. And Trump will win. He's just better at it. Have you seen Bloomberg's anemic attempts at pushing back against Trump? I'm not talking about his glossy ads. I'm talking about this.
Now, if I were for Texas, I might say Donald Trump is scared as a cat at the dog pound.
Meanwhile, just like he did in 2016, Trump will try to run to the left of Bloomberg. He'll trumpet his work on criminal justice issues, the release of Alice Johnson, his support of HBCUs, and the low black unemployment rate. This is the most important point. These vulnerabilities mean that Bloomberg simply isn't electable. Unfortunately, many Democrats seem not to care. The trouble is, we have two corporate parties. Loose campaign finance rules mean that politicians on both sides of the aisle are competing to raise millions of dollars for TV ads that are scarily effective at dictating popular opinion. The Democratic Party used to be the party of labor. Today, it's not entirely clear who working people are supposed to turn to. In 2016, some of them turned to Trump. Others stayed home, frustrated about the choice between two candidates whose resumes are largely defined by the relationship with Wall Street. Today, we risk repeating that mistake, as Michael Bloomberg, the final level mega boss of corporate candidates, is gaining steam across the country. He has spent nearly three times on ads as the entire non-billionaire Democratic field combined, and it's working. Without laying claim to any policy ideas, without responding to the questions of a single voter, he has managed to rise to the top of the polls. Bloomberg isn't able to buy these ads because of donations, which would indicate support from everyday Americans. It's because he has $60 billion in wealth. Bloomberg makes more money than fellow billionaire candidate Tom Steyer's total worth every year from interest alone. This year, he's not using that money to buy another mansion in an offshore tax haven or go on some high-octane vacation a la The Most Dangerous Game. He's using it to buy our democracy. You think I'm being melodramatic? Under the DNC debate rules, a candidate had to reach certain fundraising and polling thresholds to enter the debates. These rules are what led to candidates like Cory Booker, Tulsi Gabbard, Kirsten Gillibrand, and Andrew Yang missing some debates and ultimately dropping out. But when Bloomberg entered the race, the DNC, who just happened to receive a $300,000 donation from Bloomberg, well, they changed the rules. Because he's using his own money, Bloomberg is even less accountable to voters than politicians who rely on donations from corporate lobbyists. He can literally do whatever he wants, which is great if you think he's a benevolent savior, but here's the thing, he's the worst. In February, a month where we should be hyper-conscious of the legacy of anti-Black discrimination, one of the most racist politicians I have ever had the pleasure not to vote for is gaining fast in African-American support. And a disappointing number of establishment Democrats have been shockingly silent about what a Michael Bloomberg presidency would mean for the Black Americans whose personal liberties he so wantonly disrespects, and for American democracy as a whole. We quite simply cannot let this happen. So, please volunteer, make calls, canvass, and donate like our democracy is at stake. Because it is. This week, I spoke to two Black independent media voices who have been on the front lines of pushing back against establishment figures who are all too willing to throw marginalized groups under the bus to advance the corporate interests of the Democratic Party. First, I spoke to Tim Black, whose YouTube show provides a left perspective and much needed catharsis to hundreds of thousands of listeners. Then I spoke to an emerging voice on the left, Justin Jackson, a running back for the LA Chargers, who has amassed a cult Twitter following with his preternatural ability to expose the establishment's worst impulses. Both conversations, recorded prior to the recent circulation of Bloomberg's viral and vile recordings, provide useful context for understanding what Black voters are looking for and how progressivism is very much our movement too. Happy Black History Month. Let's get started. So I'm so glad to be joined today by Tim Black, who's a real player in the left media space, which, as we've discussed many times on this show, is so important to advancing, I think, some of the messaging and ideals that are shared broadly in the left movement, but aren't often as visible in the mainstream media. So welcome, and thank you for being here today.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. It's good to see you. This is amazing. And go Bernie, right?
Right. So I want to, for people who might not be as familiar with you and your work, can you tell us a little bit about how what your journey to left media was like?
Okay. Well, I've been at this since 2012, right? Mm. I started out just covering social issues. Mm-hmm. Someone got shot, or if there was someone on death row, or we were complaining about sentencing, mass incarceration, anything that kind of hit the radar. For instance, we would talk definitely about Kobe and Erica Garner, these types of issues, up through the 13th. And then something strange happened. So my viewers said, Tim, you got to check out this guy named Bernie Sanders. Really? And I was like, what? Oh, man, politicians lay, lie like a rug. I voted for Obama. He tricked me. You know? And I was like, I'm not interested. And they just stayed on me. Now, these were my millennials, right? Mm. They're like, no, Tim, you always talk about you want to change, you know, change the country. It's going to take policy, bro. Mm. And I said, okay, I'll check him out. And I was shocked. You know, we got this Jewish guy from New York, you know, and he's different. We're not twins or anything. He got different backgrounds, right? And he was talking about the issues that I was talking about, the same stuff. And he'd been talking about it 10, 20, 30 plus years at that time, right? I don't want to age him too much or myself. And
fair enough.
I was just the track record.
Yeah.
Of being able to go back in the encyclopedia and see that he'd never wavered. He'd always been outspoken. He was never like, I'm just going to go with the crowd. I'm going to do what you tell me to do. No, he was always a vanguard. And that's what got me into politics around 2015.
Okay. And did your show then switch to being to having a more political focus at that point?
Yeah.
Or was it kind of, did it sneak up on you? Was it a concerted choice?
Yeah. Well, you know, it became, I got burnstormed. I got motivated to it because I saw this opportunity. I said, you know, we got to get Bernie elected in 2016. So I went full in. Mm. It's what I believed. The beauty of being independent media is you get to choose your own content. You get to choose your own topics. There's no overseers, no overlords.
Right.
And contrary to some people's opinion, what they think, I actually went down in viewership in the beginning because my people didn't want politics. Like, we'll listen to a little, but what's up with Roseanne?
You know, interesting.
What's going on with the Knicks? You know, like they're I thought, what happened to all the other stories? But so at first things went the other way. Mm-hmm. People got turned off, and I had to create a new audience. Mm. And as it, you know, as it grew, as I kept going, new people came in, and they were more susceptible. And then some of the older people start coming back because, you know, things heat up around 2016. They start getting a little fever themselves. Mm-hmm. So it was that type of slow pull kind of.
So I noticed that you hit the consistency point really hard just there. Bernie has not just been saying the right thing. He's been saying the right thing for a really long time. And I have noticed, and tell me if you've noticed this as well, I feel like I hear that point especially emphasized when I talk to my Black friends and family. Yeah. And to me, what I've taken from that, or my hypothesis is that because we're a group that feels perhaps particularly betrayed by the political establishment in various ways, who feels like we're courted only periodically once every 4 years, et cetera, that having someone who does have that kind of record of consistency engenders a trust that is not necessarily there with every old random senator from a state like Vermont.
Perfect analogy of analyzing of that. Perfect. That's exactly what I would say. Most of us are conditioned for the Sundays, every other Christmas or whatever. Right. Whatever. They come through on election time on Sundays at the Black church, right? That's what they do. So that's the guard. The guard's already up and they're already, you know, susceptible for that. The radars are beaming on that focus.
Mm-hmm.
So when you show that Bernie, he's been saying the same thing, not just election time. He's saying it to empty rooms.
Yeah.
He's saying, you know, he's been talking about ending mass incarceration before it was cool, before Black Lives Matter.
Yeah.
Okay? So once that settles in and people realize that, it's like, okay, now let me take a fresh look. And that's what I think independent media has to do. We have the opportunity to educate them to the history, the long road that he's been on.
Yeah. So do you think that there are other particular issues or policies that your audience is more responsive to? Because as we're entering this kind of, you know, voting period, like it's pedal to the metal, it's go time, and we're going to get through Iowa and start going into states that have more racial diversity, South Carolina, et cetera. There's a lot of conversation now about how do candidates engender the trust of Black voters. How do candidates attract Black voters? And, you know, luckily Bernie Sanders has been neck and neck with Joe Biden among Black voters when asked, who are you open to voting for? But still, I think there's this desire to really earn and lock in those votes with some, not just the kind of generalized trust, but particular policy, Helling's particular policies. From your perspective, are there certain issues that seem to be resonating more with your audience?
Absolutely. Tangibles.
Tangibles.
Tangible policies that address economic issues.
Mm.
So for me, at the time, I had a 9-to-5 when we started. Mass incarceration were cousins, nephews, friends, neighbors.
Yeah.
But you can't just stop there. Of course, Bernie Sanders' most robust safety for all program plan, most comprehensive of any program out there. More people need to talk about it. I want to shout it from the rooftops.
Yeah.
But economics has to be a focus point as well. And I think there's this thing going on where people are talking about reparations, but really they're just talking about doing better.
Mm.
The children doing better, getting out of the hole economically. And we know Black folks hit hard with the housing crisis. So that whole shebang is where I think the policies need to be focused. Economics and upward mobility.
Well, I'm told all the time, Tim, that Black people don't care about economics. What I'm told on the internet is that it is to talk about economics is to in some way undermine the importance of racially specific programs or racially specific needs or grievances. And are you telling me that somehow I've got the wrong beat on that?
No, I think people love to feel affirmed that, yes, we have racial issues. There are some candidates who won't even say the word Black. It's hard to talk to me without saying it because my name is too Black. But you know what I'm saying? So that's like a slap in the face. Like, hey, we're here. We're the most loyal voting bloc, particularly, you know, for the Democratic Party. And 90% of the time we vote Democrat down the line. People don't even hesitate. But what are we getting for that vote?
Mm.
Okay, so I agree. Yeah, talk about. But Bernie's always like he'll send out an email, some form of way to address an issue. He's not. I haven't seen a problem with that. But he just needs to tag it into the economics. So is there a way we could say, okay, well, this is what's going on in our communities. This is a solution. Economics plays in. Race is a factor. I think just mentioning that race is a factor goes a long way.
Right. Do you find, particularly having an online base, Bernie supporters are known to be more engaged online. Certainly we have a larger social media footprint than other campaigns.
Yeah.
Bernie Sanders, by a long stretch, has more Twitter followers. We're the first campaign to have a Twitch stream, and I think still the only, with the exception of maybe Donald Trump. which is an interesting company. But, you know, he understands, I think, in a way that some Democrats have been slow to pick up on, the real power of social media and the real power of communicating with people online. You know, the Joe Rogan interview that Bernie Sanders did, getting 8 million views in the first couple of days.
Yeah.
You know, where do you see your influence and the influence of left media going forward?
Bernie is one of those people, one of the very few of that. Trump, I think, is the only contender in that realm. You look at the follower count of some of these other candidates, like, hey, I'm more popular, and I'm not running for anything.
Right.
Maybe,
well, maybe
dinner, but that's about it. But, yeah, and you would think that they would have more focus.
On. Yeah.
So a lot of the complaints that we get, right, we're too aggressive. Well, Bernie has big ideas.
Right.
People get excited when you talk about big ideas.
Yeah.
We talk about healthcare for everybody, right? The problem is these other candidates are not exciting a base. They don't have a base to really speak of. Just keep it at 100. They don't have a base to speak of.
Yeah.
And Bernie does, because he's exciting people because his policies are exciting.
Yeah.
So they say, well, we're too exuberant. We're brash. We're rude. Well, we care.
Yeah.
They could pretty much go Klobuchar or Biden or this or Buttigieg. It kind of be okay because they're all the same. The policies, none of them have policies that stick out.
Yeah. I struggle with this because I want to be sensitive to the narrative. There is obviously somebody somewhere, many of the complaints are not in good faith, but there is obviously somebody somewhere who thinks, you know, someone was mean to them online, right? And I don't want to be entirely dismissive of the fact that, of course, there's some supporters in every group that are going to act out. I've certainly been on the receiving end of a lot of that from other supporters. But at the same time, what frustrates me is the kind of pushback that says, why do you guys behave as though Bernie is the only way? Why do you guys behave as though it's all or nothing with his policies? Why do you say things like our lives are on the line and comments that from their perspective seem to be kind of, you know, exaggerated or hyperbolic? And I want to take that complaint seriously because I hear it a lot. But at the same time, when you are supporting a candidate who offers policies that are so separate and apart and far above and beyond what other people are offering, and moreover, are about these existential areas, whether it's climate change or whether or not I'm going to be able to treat a terminal illness because I'm poor.
Right.
You know, these are not the kinds of things, you know, if there's going to be litmus tests, I don't know that the bar should be set so low that poor people shouldn't die because they're poor is an unconscionable thing to say online.
Right. Well, it is hard for them to accept that we are fixated on one candidate. We won't just move to other candidates just willy-nilly.
And in a platform, right? Like it's
but that,
if Bernie were to betray some aspect of his platform tomorrow, I think a lot of people would say, oh, well, not this guy.
Right. That's what they don't understand.
Right.
That's not what you want. All I think no matter who you are, me, for instance, I want people to say, Tim's special. He's different. There are other great people. Crystal's great.
Yeah.
Soccer's great. But I like Tim. And that's what you want, right?
Sure.
So that's not my fault that I'm unique, that I'm different.
Sure.
That I have my own tone and way of delivering a message. Bernie is further than that. I mean, there are people who love Game of Thrones. You wouldn't just say, go watch The Wire. That's a different audience. And Bernie has policies.
Yeah.
So it's not just the window dressing. And Bernie never says, it's me or the highway.
Right.
It's not me, us.
Right.
He's the opposite. But the policies are so important. They mean so much. They resonate in lives. My dad, he has cancer.
I'm sorry.
And he has his medication is $1,000 per pill.
Ugh.
My dad would only live maybe a week.
Yeah.
If we don't get Medicare for All, if he loses his job. He's 72.
Yeah.
He still has to work full time.
Mm.
There's nothing for people who don't have a job, who don't have full medical coverage.
Yeah.
This is not so the behind the passion, the noise, the loud footprint that we have as Bernie supporters are real people with real stuff going on. Our dads and moms, their kids living who are going to college, who can't afford dorms right here in Baltimore, who are living in the streets to go to school right now. And you're saying, and Pete Buttigieg is saying, we don't want to give kids college because, don't want rich kids to get it. Well, rich kids are going to go to great schools. They're going to go to private universities no matter what. So the difference is
my least favorite.
Right, right.
That one makes me insane.
I had to lighten the mood. I was getting down. But the point is, these are real issues. So, yeah, people are going to be more passionate. And, yes, okay, so maybe you have to walk a different library because you're a press secretary. But Tim Black's going to say, yeah, we're loud and we're damn proud to be loud because this is people's lives we're talking about. This ain't a popularity contest. There's people's lives I want to help save. There's children I care about, neighbors, people I may meet, people I may never meet. Yeah. People across the globe from Palestine to Switzerland. I don't know. But everywhere. Like this. So I believe that strongly about Bernie's candidacy. Not him as an individual. I haven't had the pleasure to meet him. Right? But his policy and what it means for us.
I'm curious, you're such a compelling voice, and you are really in the trenches in a way that not everybody is. How did you first get the idea to even start an online platform? Because you said you started in 2012, and around that time, it wasn't, you know, the early days of YouTube per se, but we're close enough to the beginning of this whole online journey that it was still kind of in the early days, right? True. And I wonder how the landscape has changed and if you were surprised by how much power and influence has now become centered on the YouTube space.
Well, I started off in journalism. I worked for a newspaper here in D.C. called the Capital Spotlight. Circulation, like 55,000. But I had my own column, and I got a front page a couple of times and had been on the Kathy Lee's morning show. But I had a family, and I couldn't survive on basically nothing. Journalism doesn't pay well until you start doing really well, as you may know. I had to kind of put it away and focus on the job, went into IT, but I always had this. So when YouTube started to pop, I said, you know, I wasn't looking to make this full time. I got off work, I come home, I make content. And I said, I'll just talk about things that matter to me.
Yeah.
That's all. But I had a job. So that's the beauty of independent media is that it's not a job. Hopefully people approach it not as a job where you have to do X, Y, Z, but more freedom to say, this is what I really care about. This is real. This is genuine. This is not to make money. And just fortunately, I was able to get enough people where now I can sustain this full time and without any influence. So I'm fine if people don't like that I'm a Bernie supporter. I'm fine if they get turned off because I don't need everybody.
Well, what are your offline conversations like? Like, what's your, when you're dealing with family and friends who perhaps aren't engaged in politics on a daily basis, is there a different approach? Do you have, you know, I want our listeners to have some tips and tricks of the trade as we're going into these last kind of persuasive weeks when things are getting really hot and heavy.
Well, keep, you know, I have this button here, so no Joe button. I wear my memorabilia. I let people know what's up, what I believe. My mom, for instance, she says, every time she calls me, she says, how's your boy Barney doing? She knows his name, Bernie. Like, mom, you always play, you know. Is he going to beat Trump? I hope he beat Trump. But, you know, so I have friends that call me from school. I saw you. You had Nina Turner. Man, you had Nina Turner. And who was that guy from Ben & Jerry's, you know? So I'm like an evangelist of progressive politics, but in a way that talks about home issues. I tell people all the time, talk about something that affects people. With me, it's my dad. With you or someone else, it may be school loans.
Yeah.
There are people retiring who still have student debt.
It's the fastest growing population is seniors, of people who are afflicted by student debt. And something like 60,000 seniors had their Social Security checks garnished last year for student debt payments.
An idea or a policy that would alleviate that pain for millions of folks, that's not something to get excited about. Oh, maybe they're not excited about Amy because Amy's not talking about it. She's talking about Pell Grants. Yo, I'm not going to, I'm over 40, and we were talking about Pell Grants when I was in high school. That's your exciting idea.
Yeah.
That's what pragmatism is. I don't think we want that type of pragmatism. We need our seniors to be worried about how they're going to spend time with their grandkids and if they're going to go for a vacation or enjoy their golden years, not worry about are they going to leave their kids school debt because Joe Biden made it harder to discharge it? Hello? So when you start tying the issue to something real, it's not just talk anymore. It's not just rhetoric. It's not just those political people. It's real stuff.
So are the is Joe Biden, people who are, you know, supporting Joe Biden, is that what you're mostly encountering in either online or in your personal life when you're talking to voters and trying to flip them?
Yeah, you know what? Not so much. There are people that are like black folks, for instance, that I know who are over 40, 45. They know Joe. So they're like, yeah, Joe Biden. That's just because they know his name. But they know Bernie's name as well. Mm. But they don't know about Joe Biden. Mm. They don't know that Joe Biden was on a, you know, that he, for instance, that he busing or segregation. Mm-hmm. They don't know anything about segregation, about busing. They don't know anything about Joe Biden with the student debt. Mm-hmm. There's so many issues with Joe Biden. I'm
Social Security.
Okay. Yeah. Actually, like, that one message is all you need. Yeah, Joe Biden, he said he won. Well, you know what? Just play the tape. They see him say that. Yeah. It's a wrap. I was telling my wife, like, we need to let more people know about this. So if I can just tell one person, get one person to get it and have them share it, I've done something. But I want to reach a million once somebody's with that message.
Yeah, I think the potency of talking about Joe Biden's record on cutting Social Security, and for those who haven't listened, we talked about it in some depth on an episode a couple episodes ago with Crystal Ball. You know, I think that when you look at how the mainstream media has pushed back against that, how prickly they got when we started talking about that with the attack ad coming out from Joe Biden and, you know, tell the truth, Joe Biden starts trading the next day because everyone, there's these internet clashes about him trying to misrepresent his record. They know that that's a vulnerable point.
Yeah.
You know, the mainstream backlash really illustrates how much they are well aware that for seniors and black people in particular who disproportionately rely on Social Security in old age for upwards of 90% of our income. I think it's something like 50% of black American seniors rely on Social Security for 90% and more of their retirement income, that is a losing proposition if that gets out into the ether. So I really appreciate you drumming that drum and singing that point home, because there's too many of our particularly more vulnerable seniors that depend on these social programs.
I think if you take what you just said about the disproportionality of black folks being affected by it, and then you sprinkle in race, and you say the reason why, well, systemic racism, institutional racism,
absolutely,
and lack of access, lack of ability to build wealth over the years has disproportionately put us vulnerable, relying on the Social Security check, not these investments. And when they talk about how the economy is booming, that's stocks and buybacks of stocks and corporations, and only what, 5% or 10% of Americans even have
very
stock
few
in those corporations. But you mention that's a lot to say to those black voters. Oh, they get it. They understand it, right? They understand the race and economics thing, and you put it both together.
Absolutely.
At the same time.
And there's a health implication there too, with the life expectancy of black men being so low that enormous numbers of black people will never draw their Social Security checks. And if they do, only do it for a short period of time. And now we have people like Joe Biden and Republicans trying to raise the retirement age. It's going to disproportionately affect us, given that we're living in a world due to health disparities, et cetera. We're also just not even surviving as long. I mean, it's compounding harms on compounding harms. And so, yeah, I entirely agree with you. I think we'll be continuing to talk about that a lot more as a campaign, especially as we head into some of the southern states.
I think it's going to sell itself. There's not much you need to do. I would just like to say that we just be more forceful. I know people are saying we need to be more civil. I just think that's the wrong way to go, because it's crunch time. People need to hear. Now, I know Nina Turner told me, she said, Tim, soft on people, hard on issues.
Right.
Soft on people, hard on issues, right? But meanwhile, they're trashing her at every turn. I've had to jump in the defense. Susan Sarandon, Nina Turner, I got a little army. We got a wolf pack. We had to go in there and, like, calm them down. And because these people just go relentlessly. It's like our supporters, our voices, our people that speak truth to power, they get bombarded all the time. So I know, I take it personal that they chastise Nina the way they do, the way that they go after Susan and blame her for all the faults of a campaign of millions of
the entire world.
You know, like, everything is Susan's fault. It's just Susan's fault.
Right,
like,
I really? Sprained my ankle. It was Susan. Truly, it's truly.
It rained today. Nina and Susan
right,
did it.
And Senator Turner and Susan Sarandon, they both act with an incredible amount of grace in the face of that onslaught. So I look to them as examples, and I do a hoo-sah.
Yeah.
And I try to follow their lead, because ultimately I think that Senator Turner is right. people act out, and people who have acted out in the past have now in 2020 shown a remarkable ability to kind of come to terms with and be honest about the fact that they don't like what they were when they look back in 2016. I mean, I'm continually blown away by Peter Dow and his wife Leela's transformation and how, you know, forthright and open they've been about seeing things differently this time around. And how can you say you're the party that understands that you need to get to the root causes of, let's say, criminal justice, and you need to understand that people are largely created by their environment, and that, you know, you want to be able to rehabilitate people when they come out of prison, and prison isn't supposed to be a death sentence, and to, you know, to want to take away the barriers for people to connect with their families in prison, and get rid of all of the expense around making phone calls, et cetera, the way that Bernie has plans to do. How can you say that you buy into all of that and respecting the humanity of all of us, regardless of our carceral status, and then want to take away one of the most intrinsic rights that we have in this country, right? And so you can't have it both ways. You can't have to say you're, you know, a progressive,
right,
and be against prisoners voting, or be against accepting and forgiving people in your personal life.
Yeah.
People, you know, people who, yes, there's some crappy stuff online. If I can't forgive Peter Dow,
right,
for saying some crappy stuff online, how am I going to say that I am going to be a criminal justice advocate for people who have done, you know, real things that are bad,
yeah,
you know, in this world?
Well, you know, just to, I know, I don't think you meant to like go there as far as the criminal justice thing, as far as incarcerated. But I got to say, you know how I feel about this. I mean, you don't want people to vote because what's their pushback? Oh, well, they might be influenced by the prison warden, might make them all vote for this. Oh, let's fix that.
Let's fix the coercive
nature
of the prison system.
Let's lock that warden up. But you mean, let's give these people back their rights.
Right.
Let's give them their rights back. That's not an excuse. Horrible argument. And I saw some people go along with it. I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to have to speak about that. But yeah, I agree. And same reason why I don't support the death penalty.
Right.
There are, like, it's not that I enjoy that someone was murdered, but my thing is, our system has shown that it cannot be
trusted,
unbiased.
Right.
That we know this,
right.
And if we know that, you're putting people to death that don't deserve it. You're putting innocent people. How many times have we seen someone exonerated by a DNA test from something they were sitting on death row?
Yeah.
Okay, so in principle, I think this is what you were saying. In principle, Bernie said, "I can't support this thing."
Right.
I don't care what people think. This is what I believe.
Right.
And to be consistent. And that's why I love a guy.
Yeah.
It's not because I think he's funny. I like him when he was with Larry David.
Yeah.
You know, but this is why I love him, because I feel that he's not going to change. He's not going to be like, oh, now I'm this new person. Look at me. I think he's going to stay the same. And he's focused. And I just love that. I love the fact that he's rigid in his belief systems. We need more people like that. All great relationships to build on stability.
You should be rigid about your ethics.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's what you know what I mean. Like,
yeah,
I believe that, you know, we need existential threat is, you know, and climate change, you know, and be focused on that. And like, did somebody wants to say we're gonna bring back coal jobs, even though you think of the win votes in the West Boat, you're like, no, we need to go another way, and I love that because it's true, it's real, and we're not selling people a dream.
Right. And to still be able to have those conversations and advocate for you know, the Green New Deal, while respecting the humanity of those that are going to be impacted, and say the way we get around this is not to say, oh, well, you lost your coal job, but to say we are going to provide for you with a Green New Deal jobs program. We're going to make sure that we can respect the humanity of everybody who's impacted, whether you're impacted because you are the subject of environmental racism or you're someone who is now going to have to transition into a new realm of employment because the job that you had was not sustainable. And that threat of humanism is truly what gives me the confidence to join this campaign in this capacity. You know, I was a journalist. I have no interest in, you know, shoveling for anybody. And I wouldn't have joined if I felt like I was going to have to do that, or if somehow my own personal values were not going to be in alignment with what's going on in this campaign. And so I'm heartened to be here. I'm heartened to have allies like you
Absolutely.
With me in the struggle. Can you tell listeners where to find you? They want to watch your show or any other projects that you have going on that we should know about?
Sure. Go to timblacktv.com for all that stuff. I'm on every platform that you're on. It's Real Tim Black. We do show Monday through Fridays at 10 p.m. On Fridays, we got a call-in show. And it's great because people call in from all over the world, not just the United States. People love Bernie in Australia, Japan. Like, people call from all over the world, literally say, we're praying for you. We're then down under in Australia, but we're praying. I'm like, wow, okay, cool. So yeah, join me there. But I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing, Bree. I believe in it. I don't get paid to support Bernie. I do because I believe in the policy. I believe in the vision. And I love the organization. I love what you guys are doing. I don't sit around, you know, and say and think that that there is no way for us to succeed. I think positively about what we need to do to succeed. Mm. And I think that's part of it. Mm. I think some people are afraid to have hope, literally. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But if we get out in the streets, Bernie said, it's not just me. It's going to take all of us. We got to. So, yeah. So it's more than just Bernie. It's going to be what we do as a community. And that's what we're trying to build.
Thank you. Thank you for that revolutionary spirit of yours.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
So I'm thrilled to be joined by Justin Jackson today on Hear the Burn. If you don't know him from being a breakout star on Twitter on the left recently, he plays football in the NFL for the LA Chargers. Thank you so much for joining me today, Justin.
I appreciate you having me on, Brianna.
So part of why I really, really have been wanting to talk to you is because you're part of this phenomenon of people who perhaps weren't necessarily that involved in politics, but who've been really galvanized by the progressive movement that, at least in the context of this election, is, you know, led by Bernie Sanders. Can you tell me a little bit about your radicalization or your politicization?
Yeah. So for me, it all kind of started in 2016. Granted, I was 18 years old, so that's kind of when I first was able to vote and everything. So that's kind of when I had my political awakening. But it really unfortunately happened like after the primary was already over and really in the general. And where I went to school, Northwestern, like we had a lot of very like socially conscious, maybe not as politically conscious, but a lot of socially conscious people on the team. We used to have a lot of debates. And it really kind of set the stage for me because participating in those debates, I always wanted to be knowledgeable about the topics I was talking about. And when politics came up, I just didn't know that much. You know, I felt like I was a Democrat because my parents were and like I nominally agreed with their platform more so than the Republican platform. But that's really was like the extent of my political knowledge. And so it was I had a hard time kind of explaining to some of my teammates like why they should vote for a Democrat or Republican because I just didn't know much. So I had to become a lot more knowledgeable. And for me, like I tried to watch cable news, but they just weren't talking about anything substantive. They were just talking about Trump's tweets or emails or this is just like random stuff that necessarily didn't, you know, make you want to vote for somebody. It wasn't like you should vote for them because of this. It was like, well, this person has character flaws. This person has that. So that's why I wanted to dive deeper into the political history behind just Democrats versus Republicans, left versus right wing issues, but also the candidates' history and their voting records, all that type of stuff. And so that's when I kind of became like, well, I don't think I really like either of these candidates very much because I don't necessarily agree with either of their platforms. And that's when I started to discover Bernie and some of the, and just the progressive movement in general. And I right away, I was like, this is what I relate to. This is what I believe in. This is the type of policies I think that we'll need going forward to really improve this country as a whole. And for me, I come from a kind of upper working class, middle class family. But my parents, they grew up in very working class poor communities. And so I know that these are the type of policies that are going to need to be implemented to fix those communities that maybe I didn't necessarily come from, but that my parents came from, that a lot of people I know came from. So that's really why I kind of, like you said, I was galvanized by this progressive movement and I related most with that and I wanted to push those policies forward.
I want to come back to ask you about what specific policies were the ones that really drew you in the first instance. But I'm curious about this media piece where you found consuming mainstream media to be kind of unsatisfying and not especially informative. You know, I am someone who comes from the independent media world, having worked for The Intercept. We had Cristobal from Rising on the show recently. I'm curious what sources you found to be useful and how you managed to connect to them. You know, how did you discover left media?
Yeah. So what I think is so awesome about this day and age, right, is social media. And for me, like, because I couldn't find those outlets on cable news, and because I was like in college, I was on the go a lot, obviously with football and class, like, and so YouTube became a huge thing for me. And that's where I found like the Young Turks. That's where I found Kyle Klinsky and Secular Talk and the Rational National and Jimmy Dore and all these type of huge, like, progressive platforms where they would actually talk about real issues. And that's what I love so much, is they'd have 20, 30 minute long segments about real issues, about voting records, about, it wasn't just like you're hearing, you know, kind of like surface level talk on the, on TV or even in the debates. Like, they didn't dive deep in anything. But when I was watching these on these platforms, I was actually, I feel like I was becoming more knowledgeable on this stuff. Like, I was actually learning stuff that I could use, like, to say, well, this is why I support this person. It's not just because they're a Democrat. No, I support this person because they support Medicare for All, because they support Green New Deal, et cetera, et cetera. And like, that's, I think that hits home with voters, and it hit home with me very much so, because I don't like to get involved with this cult of personality type thing. I want to know what you've been fighting for and what you will fight for and what your record is. And so I think being in the athletic world, like, a lot of it is like, you have to put on film, right? It's not just about you saying you're going to do this. It's about what have you actually put on film, right? That's what I'm going to believe. I'm going to believe what you've actually done, what I can actually see. And so I think when it came to the progressive candidates and people like Bernie, it's like, well, he's been saying this stuff for years and years and years. This isn't just like, oh, he's flip-flopped and whatever the way the wind blows, that's what he's going with. He's actually been fighting for this stuff, even when no one was paying attention. And that's something that I, and I think a lot of other young people, can respect. So that was definitely something. And then, like you said, in you worked for The Intercept. That's another print outlet that I would look at, The Nation. I definitely was on online more, but there was other print, progressive leaning print outlets that I looked at as well.
I'm curious, you mentioned that you were having these political conversations at Northwestern with your teammates. Do you have them in the NFL with your teammates? And if so, what are they like? Do you find yourself people being open to the kind of things that motivated you? Do you find that people have are having different considerations as they decide what to do in 2020? I'm really curious.
Yeah, no. Well, I think there's definitely less conversations in the NFL, just because, for the simple fact that in college, you're living with these people, you're going to class with these people, you're in the locker room, like, after workouts, waiting for class. So, like, there's just more ample opportunity for these debates. In the NFL, it's like, we go to work and we're working the whole day. And then once we leave, people go home to their families and all type of stuff. No one really rooms together. There's a few people, but not that many. So, but there are conversations that are had in the locker room. And what's really interesting is that you really do find a spectrum of people. It's really a microcosm of the real world. Like, you have people that vote Republican. You have people that are more like moderate, or whatever you want to say, center right, center left type people. And then you have people that are more progressive, you know, true left personalities and ideology. So that's why I like actually having these conversations, is because you kind of get out of your echo chamber, right? You actually hear these other arguments. And even though, you know, they might not be correct in my view on some of the substance, I think they truly believe that. And you can also see the type of, you can kind of hear through how they're arguing, what type of media they take in. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, and that's another thing where, like, well, you said that, but I mean, that's been debunked, but I think a lot of people just don't dive as deep as I do into it. So it's like, you have to find ways to kind of talk to people and not disparage them, because these are my brothers. I still love them. I don't care how they voted. Like, they're my brothers, you know, and they would do anything for me. I'd do anything for them. So, like, you have to find a way to talk to people without disparaging them, while also arguing your side and why you think this is the right way for the country to go. So that's what I liked about college and the NFL, is that you have that brotherhood where, even if you're arguing, it's like you're arguing with a sibling. Like, at the end of the day, you're still going to love each other, even if you have disagreement on the issues. And I think that's something that this country and in the political the political atmosphere we live in, it's like, sometimes that's really hard for people to do, is actually have a good faith disagreement without turning to personal attacks and without, you know, disparaging other people, which is really why I love the Bernie campaign. Is they never like are trying to do that, never trying to go personal on things. It's just, look, this is the record of it. We have video of it, whatever, but we're not going to attack the person. We're just going to attack, you know, their belief on the issues.
Yeah, I think that's such an important point. There's a lot of discourse about unity, right? And not wanting the kind of left, you know, center left versus center left divide in the Democratic Party hurt our chances down the line in a general. But there's at the same time, a lot of the people who are kind of center left who are making that argument often seem to be really disdainful of the idea of putting together a coalition that includes different kinds of voices or having conversations with people who historically haven't always aligned with Democrats, people who are independents, you know, people who are non-voters, because they haven't seen themselves in the party before. There's almost this, you know, way that we talk about Democrats and non-Democrats as though non-Democrats are traitors. And it's like a team sport. I mean, you know, not that there's anything wrong with team sports, but they treat politics like, you know, that other person is my enemy, as opposed to the way I think of it is that politics truly is about persuasion. And it's about putting together policies that genuinely appeal to people because they address their material needs without, you know, pandering or undermining the integrity of what we believe in order to solicit those votes. And I think that's a distinction that's really important that gets blurred when people talk about, you know, partisanship or who we should or should not be talking to.
Right. No, I think that's a few things on that front. I have to say is the whole unity argument. I mean, they love to say unity, but then when, okay, so if Bernie becomes the nominee, then you have to unify, like you've been saying,
right,
with the progressives, and that's who the Democratic electorate has chosen to be the nominee. So now you have to unify behind him, and then it's like, whoa, we don't know if we're going to vote for him. So it's, you can see the hypocrisy on his face.
Right.
And then at the same time, with a candidate like Bernie, who can, like you said, develop a coalition of independents, Republican voters that are disaffected, and Democrats, well, that's something that wasn't that Hillary's whole strategy was to go and get moderate Republicans in the suburbs, right? That was the strategy. So if Bernie can go do that, that's what the Democratic Party has been pushing for, then that's a good thing.
Right.
And so we shouldn't treat that like it's a bad thing. No, it's a good thing when you're getting independents and you're getting those disaffected Republican voters who maybe are voting because of trade deals or maybe voting because, you know, their jobs have been outsourced, whatever it is. If you can get them in your coalition and build a broad coalition, that's exactly what the Democratic Party is supposed to be about, right? It's a big tent party.
Right.
And so I think that's something that Bernie is a candidate. He's a candidate that can do that. He has a movement that has a wide coalition among demographics, among class, absolutely, among race, among whatever you want to say. He has that coalition. And that's why a lot of us believe that he's the best candidate to go against Trump.
Right. Such a big difference between courting Republican voters by using advancing a Medicare, you know, healthcare policy that was developed by wealthy conservative elite interests versus attracting different kinds of voters because they actually need real healthcare and actually want and believe in the same things that working class liberals believe in, right? So you mentioned this coalition building aspect, and, you know, something that Bernie was critiqued a lot for in 2016 was the relative lack of diversity in his support, although, of course, a lot of us people of color were supporting him back then. Now he has, in fact, the most diverse, most working class coalition in the race. And yet somehow this narrative is still, you know, following him in some quarters. So I want to ask you, as a young Black man, what your perception is of how Bernie Sanders is perceived among your friends and peers when you talk about him, especially since polling wise, we are number one and have been even back in 2016, number one with, you know, younger Black voters under 35.
Yeah. So a few things on that. I think in 2016, I think something that's difficult for just minority communities in general is, like, for us, a lot of it is trust. Right. And a lot of us didn't, because he was not covered in the news media. And that's how a lot of, especially older Black voters, take in their news, is through just older voters in general, but especially older Black voters, is through cable news. Like, because he wasn't talked about at all, I think that's a huge reason why a lot of Black people just went with a familiar name. right? And so I think now that he has that name recognition, he can bring in a lot of those kind of older, middle-aged Black voters or people of color in general into the coalition. And then when it comes to younger people, like, it's just, I think it's across race. Of course, it includes young Black men and women, but also just across races, yeah, young people, because we see Bernie. And it's not about, you know, there's other, obviously, younger candidates that are close to our generation that are running. But it's not about that for us. It's not about pandering, like you said, to us because you're a young, hip, cool person, right, and you can dance. All the time. Like, that's not what it is for us. Like, we have real issues. We're having issues starting families because of student loan debt, because of health care. Like, so a lot of people are scared to get off their parents' plan when they turn 26 because now you got to pay for your health care, and yep, it's the exorbitant cost. Like, how are you going to pay for that when you're trying to pay off student loan debt and all those other type of stuff? There's barely any jobs. They tell you to go to college and you'll be fine. And you go to college, you're under this enormous amount of debt, and now there's no good jobs out there for you. You know what I mean? And it's like, I went to Northwestern, which is a great school, and there's still people that I know that are struggling finding a job, but yeah, a solid job, which is just wild to me. So I think we understand those real issues and how Bernie is actually planning to address those issues. And he's not, like you said, capitulating to any other, he's not compromising his values to get us into this coalition. No, he's pushing forward the ideas he's always pushed forward, and that's why we're coming into this coalition. So I think it's a very strong movement, and very something that I love to see, that people of all colors that are young are coming together for Bernie and for his movement. And it's bigger than Bernie, and like he says, it's not him, it's all of us. And that's, for me, like, playing team sports and being becoming brothers with so many people at once is, like, really cool for me to see. I feel like Bernie's movement is a brotherhood, a sisterhood. It's just a big group of people, a big movement of people that are all pushing to save our country, really to save the world from all these existential threats that we see that are right up on the horizon. And we really think Bernie is the candidate to kind of quell that and really push us towards a new future.
Beautifully, beautifully put. I'm curious, do you have these conversations, not to put your family on blast, but with older relatives, with your dad, like, what's their take on all of this?
Yeah, no, it's actually really interesting. And for me, I've had to, like, I've had to kind of what's the word I'm looking for? Because, like, my parents watch, like, cable news, like, they're, like, kind of brainwashed into that, or they at least have been. And really, like, it's hard, especially for Black people after Obama in 2008 and 2012, obviously, like, having a Black president, something that a lot of, especially older Black people, thought they'd never see in their life, like, having him be the president and then actually having to critique him and his presidency and his policies and stuff like that, that's really difficult for Black voters. And for younger Black people to convince your older, you know, Black family that, look, like, we understand symbolically how Obama was a great thing for us, for our people. We have to support a candidate who is pushing for policies that will help our people disproportionately.
Yeah.
And he's really the only candidate doing that. And it doesn't matter what he looks like. It doesn't matter what his age is or none of that matters. It's about the movement he has behind him.
Yeah.
And it's about the policies that he's pushing forward. So for me, like, I've basically turned my parents into Bernie voters, and I've been trying to do that with the rest of my family. I've been trying to educate my teammates, and for a lot of them, it's like, a lot of us, especially young Black people that, you know, went to college and got educated, like, we understand that the system is so stacked against us that it's very easy to be like, you know what, F that. Like, we want to get away from the system overall. And it's hard to be like, well, this might be our only shot. This might be the only candidate that we have that is actually going to break us out of this corporate owned pushing for just wealthy interest system that we have into a system that actually works for people like us and for people that we know that look like us. And so that's the conversation that I've been trying to have more and more. And it really has been kind of taking hold in a lot of the circles that I'm in and the circles that I see. And that's really encouraging.
Well, you are doing the Lord's work. Thank Thank you for that.
I'm trying. It's tough. But no, you guys are doing the Lord's work. I'm just trying to be an advocate. I'm sorry.
Well, part of what your advocacy obviously is happening on Twitter. I mean, that's how I kind of found you, how a lot of people found you, that you were just like spitting fire on Twitter and, you know, tangling with some of the biggest names out there who are critics of a more progressive policy platform. I'm curious, like, has there been any kind of, has it been difficult for you? Has there been any negative reaction? I don't know. How is your job? Has anybody talked to you about how vocal you've been about your politics?
No, there's been no pushback. I haven't gotten talked to by anybody. If anything, it's been positive. You know, I talked to my agent. I talked to some of the people. My agents had people text him. Like, it's just talking to like my teammates and stuff like that. I think it's something that I think is to be admired, but really it's not difficult to speak your mind, and especially when it's the truth. You know what I mean? If you're actually, you're just kind of kowtowing or like I said earlier, capitulating to certain interests, then when you're saying it, you're kind of like, you're kind of like sweating a little bit. Like, that's not something that I truly believe in. But if it's something you actually believe in, then I think it's like, if you don't speak out, it's kind of, it's really on you. You know what I mean? I think this is a moment that we can't miss in history. And I want to make sure that my voice is heard and that I'm, you know, being a part of this and not being like, oh, looking back 10, 20 years from now, like, I wish I could have done more in that moment to push for something that I think will really help this country. And so that's why I've been more vocal. Obviously, the caucuses are coming up and the primary is about to be in full swing soon. So that's something that I want to do. I don't want to be like, oh, I missed this moment where I could have made a difference.
I often say, I mean, I'm someone who came up on Twitter myself. I feel like my journalism career started with me tweeting a lot. And I don't think I would have taken this job. I know I wouldn't have taken this job if I didn't feel like I was going to be doing the same thing I was doing before as a journalist, which is just speaking the truth. Right. I have no interest in going on TV to prevaricate for some nonsense that I don't believe in. And so that what you said, it really resonates with me very strongly. It is easy to seem like you know your stuff and are really competent and, you know, committed when, in fact, your personal beliefs are exactly aligned with a candidate that you support. Exactly. And I'm really grateful 100%. To be in that position. And I'm really grateful that we have a candidate this time around for whom a lot of Americans feel the same. So,
yeah, I think Joe Rogan really, at the end of the video Bernie put out where Joe Rogan was talking, is Bernie has been insanely consistent and fought for the same thing for 30, 40 years. So that's a real, like he said, it's a really, I think he said a really strong structure to, what did he say? There's a really strong structure to operate from. I think that's what he said. Mm. And it's so true. And I think the same thing about us talking about our beliefs is we have a strong foundational structure that we're operating from when we say these things. Mm. We're not saying it, you know, and for me, like, as a person, like, I'm not really in those working class, middle class communities anymore, but that doesn't mean I can't advocate for them because that's where I come from. You know what I mean? So even if you're out of that community, it doesn't mean you're not advocating for that community. You know what I mean? And I'm already paying 50% taxes in California anyway. And where are my tax dollars going? You know what I mean? Like, people are still, there's every single time you drive in LA under the bridge, there's a tent city there. You know what I mean? There's homeless people everywhere.
Yeah.
There's people struggling. Right. So it's not even that you're going to be paying exorbitantly more taxes. It's like, where are your tax dollars going?
Yes.
And I think that's a big thing is like, of course, people don't want to pay taxes because they've never seen their taxes actually work for them.
Right.
Right. So if you can actually see your taxes work for you and we're supporting each other in the society, which is what the society is supposed to be built on. Right. Is you support each other. And that's why you pay taxes. You pay taxes in so that you get something back out of it. And I think when you're paying taxes and you still have to pay healthcare costs, you still have to pay student loan costs, you still can't find a job, you have to pay for childcare that you can't afford. Like, of course you're not going to want to pay your taxes, but if you actually see your taxes work for you in a way that, you know, you can actually live your life with a little bit less stress on your plate, like, then I think so people will be more okay with that. And that's where I come from. Like, I'm already paying half my paycheck in taxes, but there's it's still not going to help people.
Mm-hmm. You sound just like Cardi B. That's exactly what Cardi B said. Someone tried to come at her with that, like, what about your taxes stuff? She's like, I'm for it. I'm for it as long as the taxes are going to the people who actually need it. So thank you so much for taking this time to talk with me today. You're such a delight.
Of course.
I really look forward to watching it. You're a young man with a long professional career ahead of you. And I also hope to see you continue to engage in politics because you're such an important voice and such an inspiring one as well.
Thank you. Thank you, Brianna. I really appreciate you having me on. And I hope that the campaign keeps going well, and I'll do everything I can to help. So I appreciate it.
Thank you. That's it for this week. Hear the Burn is produced by me, Brianna Joy Gray, Ben Dalton, and Christopher Moore. Let us know what you think at HearTheBurn@BernieSanders.com or else take to Twitter with the hashtag HearTheBurn. Be sure to like, comment, and subscribe to Bernie's YouTube channel for more episodes and other great Bernie content. Till next week,